Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi again, and welcome to the New Books in Latino Studies, a channel within the New Books Network. I am your host, Tiffany Gonzalez. And today on the program, we have Teresa Palomo Acosta. She is the co-founder and former vice president of the Ruth Weingarten Memorial Foundation for Texas Women's History. She is the author of many works of fiction and poetry and is the co-author of Las Tejanas, 300 Years of History. She is my guest on today's podcast, and she will discuss her award-winning book, Tejana Land, a writing life in four acts, published with Texas A&M University Press in 2021. Hello, y'all, and welcome to the New Books in Latino Studies. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me today, Teresa. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for having me on your program.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to dive in and talk about your work today. So I want to start off this conversation. I want you to kind of tell us about who you are, your professional and personal background, and what drove you to writing this book a little bit.
Well, I come from Central Texas. I was born in a little town about 90 miles north of Austin called McGregor. And I ended up in Austin, Texas to complete my undergraduate degree at the University of Texas in Austin. I'd always had a desire to write, I guess, since I was a child, about 11 years old. And so I ended up writing poetry initially, which is still remains my favorite genre when I was 16. I ended up studying journalism because I thought that that would be one way that I could tell stories. I did not spend a lot of time as a professional in journalism, although journalism has been really important in my own writing. Ultimately, I taught English writing, women's studies, particularly Chicana studies, at St. Andrews University and then at the University of Texas at Austin. But I would say most of my life I've spent doing research and writing, and I spent some of that time before I retired at the Don Frisco Center for American History at UT Austin.
Thank you for that. Can you tell us a little bit about how the idea for your book came about? Because it seems a lot that your personal background growing up in Central Texas and your love for writing and journalism poetry, I mean, that's the bedrock of this book. Can you tell us a little bit about how the initial ideas for compiling it came about?
Well, it's really kind of fascinating. I did not approach anyone with the book idea. I was approached by the Ruth Weingarten Foundation for Texas Women's History. They have organized a joint publishing program with Texas A&M University Press. So I was approached by the Weingarten Foundation and asked if I was interested in putting together a manuscript. And I said, well, let me think about it. And I was told that I could put together a manuscript of my choice, whatever I wanted to do, which gave me a lot of freedom. So what I decided to do was I decided to focus on a period of 30 years of my writing. And I pulled together from that some works that I had always wanted to see in print. And that ended up, since I had worked in different genres, I ended up putting together two plays from a three-play trilogy, a children's story that I love a great deal, and they had independently been published on its own at one time. Four essays, three of them really dealing with what I consider my Tejano literary awareness, and then a fourth essay on my work with Ruth Weingarten on Las Tejanas. And then 92 poems, as it turns out, that are fairly more recent from about 2013 to 2018. So I wanted this book to be a compilation of the different genres that I had worked in, and that focused very much on my experiences as a writer on Tejanos and Tejanas that I knew of in my generation and from my parents' experience of Texas.
I really enjoyed, I enjoyed reading the whole book, but I would love for you to tell the audience a little bit more about the children's story, Las Colchitas, and how that came about, if you can give us insight into that and what that meaning is for you.
Well, Colchas Colchitas is loosely based on one of my very well-known poems, My Mother Piece Quilts. My Mother Piece Quilts I wrote when I was an undergraduate at UT in the only creative writing class I ever took. Dr. Carlota Cardenas de Dwyer was a teacher, and I wrote it as a classroom exercise. She was working on an anthology on the United States and American literature, and she asked to put it in that book. In about 1988 or so, I got a call from a Southwestern editor for Public Mifflin at that time, asking me if I wrote children's stories. And I said, no, I didn't, but I would try. So I decided to use My Mother's Piece Quilts as the background for Colchas Colchitas. And so then decided to invent a story about a little girl whose grandmother tells her the story of the family through the quilts she makes. And it certainly is very much related to My Mother Piece Quilts, because in My Mother Piece Quilts, I talk about how my mother put together pieces of fabric that reminded me of a vacation we had taken or a dress that she had made for us. So in Colchas Colchitas, I really wanted to create a very warm family environment in which this child learns about why the family makes its own quilts. And I wanted to insert in that a mother who's a professional, an aunt who's a writer, with other people with their lives in the agricultural world, because I wanted to give a sense of this breadth of information, knowledge and experience that the Tejano community has always had. And my sense was that a lot of those stories don't do that. They kind of just sort of make it warm and fuzzy in one way, but you don't get a sense of the history. And so I really wanted to give people this experience of the grandmother being a great teacher in this regard, telling her about the family through the fabrics.
That was so beautiful, because incorporating your intellectual reasoning, but also that familial aspect of how in poetry and writing, right, we still are able to create a presence of our own culture, of Mexican American or Chicana culture, or in this aspect, Tejana culture, right, of how you're giving life to that through writing and making it present. And that was just like outstanding of how, you know, threading through and sewing through personal belongings to retain culture, that you really were able to capture that in your own writings, that I believe those listening should will find that remarkable as well.
One of the things about Colchas Colchitas, and in general a lot of my writing, but just to focus on that story, I think it's really important for me as a writer to just make the presumption that what the Tejanas have been doing is a very natural thing. It is not to make anything exotic. So I really want in my work to not sort of say, hey, guess what? You're reading about the Tejanas. I just want to make it flow. And so it becomes a normative. It's not unusual. It's not exotic. It's just the norm of a world named Tejana Land.
Exactly, with the title, Tejana Land. And you mentioned earlier, as part of your writings, right, you spoke about your Tejana literary abuelas, Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, who are they? Give that aspect to those listening and what they mean to you.
Well, there are three women I'll mention briefly and there are many more at the Hana Literary Abuelas as yet to be uncovered. Some of them will be our family members, and some of them will be women, in this case, in history, who were very significant. Sara Estela Ramirez, the poet, very much important to the start of the Mexican Revolution. There is Elena Zamora O'Shea, the writer of the Mesquite, and then Rubita González de Mireles is probably the best known of these women. I did not discover any of these women until I was well into adulthood. I was a Mexican American Studies major at the University of Texas in Austin. They didn't allow us to call it Mexican American Studies at that time. It was Ethnic Studies. And then it was a concentration in Mexican American Studies. I didn't meet any of these women in my studies there. It was only when I was probably in my 30s that I first discovered Julita González. Partly through the work I was doing at Texas State Historical Association, and most importantly through Cynthia Orozco, the historian, who basically knew more about her than I did. And so what I discovered in these three women were, one, their connection to the culture, their connection as writers. And that was very key, that they were all connected to me through my history and through writing. And so for Sara Estela Ramirez, essentially the name of the essay is The Hana History as a Poem, Sara Estela Ramirez and Me. So I wanted to discuss her as how we related to one another as poets. And the idea that these women exist in history but have not yet been very well known, it was just important for me to highlight them in all these works that I wrote. Sara Estela Ramirez, I wrote that essay for a women's conference that was held when I was at TSHA. The one on Jovita González I wrote because Cynthia Orozco sort of commanded me to write that piece to deliver at the opening session of a conference on Mexican American Studies that we held when I was at the Texas State Historical Association. And the one on Elena Zamora, I did in part because I was invited by students at Southwestern University to talk about a woman that was not well known. And so I chose to write about her and other escritoras, I call escritoras tejanas. And she was very important, and her work was very certainly well discussed in John Morán González's book, Border Renaissance, in which he credits really the writers with pulling together the ideas to object to the celebration of the Texas Centennial that denied Mexican Americans involvement in Texas. So these women, because they were writers and they were so outspoken, they were writing from years before I was even born. That really was so important to me to put into this book, because they are very much the landscape of a Tejana understanding of our lives.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Absolutely. And their writings, I mean, even me as a historian, we kind of credit, and the historical record, right, we credit these women as, even from their different juncture of discipline, as the original, as one of the first, right? Pardon me, not the original, but one of the first historians of Tejana histories, because they're talking about sensitive issues within their, about their culture, about the region, about the time. And so I thought that's to be so beautiful, but also so starking that it sometimes takes us to go when we're in college to learn about this. And I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about what was going on through during that social time period that for these histories to be at the forefront at UT. Was it because of the movements, or is it because of the professors that were focusing on Mexican-American history?
Well, when I was at the University of Texas, we were struggling greatly to just make sure that the area of studies in Mexican for on Mexican origin people was validated by the academic world. And we ran into a great number of problems. Dr. Américo Paredes, who was the first director of Mexican American Studies at UT, who's a highly respected folklorist, but even with his work, it was still a struggle for him to get recognition to create his program. So when I was at the university, we had what I would call the first large wave of Chicanos and Chicanas, mainly men at this time, who were being trained in history. And they became really, it's because of that generation that we now have a much stronger Mexican-American studies program throughout the country. Some of the people who were there who came in as postdoctoral fellows were from California. And so I met Juan Gomez Quiñones at that time and others. So we banded together the students. We also incorporated art, music, theater to make our case. And we were very much involved in the grape strikes and the like. So we always saw our work as being very much connected to the community. In other words, if you're an academic, your responsibility is certainly to that world of exploration, of ideas, debates, and the like. But you also have to know that you come from the community, and you have to use that as a basis of saying the community's life, its history, is significant to the studies that we do in universities. That it's not something that you just separate at all. And I think sometimes I had the belief as someone growing up that there was some sort of arena, the academic arena, that was separate because it was, to use a silly word, highfalutin. And the reality was that everything that I've written about in many ways, and certainly in terms of the poetry, comes very much from the lived experience of people. And we know when we study literature, for example, that it's the people whose stories writers are interested in telling, whether it's, Isabel Allende, or Shakespeare, or anyone else in any other environment, that is Chekhov in Russia, that it's the people's stories. And I think a great professor can always convey that to their students. Is they don't live in a glorified world of that's separate. They have to be very much attuned to what the people are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, myself, when I think about my writings and the readings that, that I read of others, there's a sense, there should be a sense of connection to the community outside the academic world. Giving, as a historian, I take no ownership in the histories of other people. I'm just their translator or their, their interpreter of their histories. And I think sometimes, there is, this thinking that as academics take ownership, but we don't take ownership. And that's something so beautiful that I think that you've explained, right? There's always a commitment to the outside world, outside the institution. And I think that goes into what a lot of readings within Mexican history or Mexican American history or Tejano history is that it's always a channel of communication between the community and the institution, and always taking responsibility and to that community of the people that you write about. And one in speaking of which, in your book, you write about collaboration a lot. And I think that's kind of very central to Latinos and Mexican-American history. And it's very much a feminist, Chicana feminist thought, right? Collaboration is always key. And you write about a piece in one essay about your collaborative engagement with writing Las Tejanas. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What was the meaning behind that? Now that you've, so many years have passed since the publication, what meaning does it have for you now?
Well, in terms of the collaboration, the person I was working with, Ruth Weingarten, was the mother of Texas women's history in terms of writing history. Without Ruth, we wouldn't have that as a field. You know, she produced probably 17 more than that books, many of them in collaboration with other people. So I came into the project through a very unusual pattern. I when I heard about the book she was working on or wanted to work on, she had another collaborator who had to leave the project because of other responsibilities. But when I first heard about it, I was on the panel Ruth had invited me to speak at, I remember thinking, what a terrible idea, not a terrible idea, but it just made me feel very fearful because I thought, how can you write this general survey? It's so overwhelming. And by then I had many years of experience of having worked at the Handbook of Texas where I focused on Mexican American history. Well, by and by, when I returned to my home, Ruth contacted me. And before I knew it, I was part of this project. And I just decided that I wouldn't think about it for very long because the more I thought about it, the more frightened I would be. So we decided to do a general survey to cover 300 years, and we were warned not to do that because who does that? Well, you know, I'm not trained as a historian, so I didn't have professors saying to me, don't do it, you'll fail. And Ruth had studied history much more formally than I had, but she was a risk taker. So these two risk takers got together and we pulled this off. In the essay, I tried very much to elaborate exactly how we worked. We did have those meetings that we would have on Saturdays to discuss our week's work. I lived in a little apartment next to Ruth that was in the same house, and her office is in between where she lived and where I lived. And so we had this opportunity to basically talk every day. We didn't know each other very well, but we were both very hard workers. Ruth told me, you know, Vanessa, you have quite a work ethic. And I said, well, that's part of my upbringing and part of being trained in journalism where you meet deadlines all the time. So the collaboration of what happened with that essay is that I wrote it in part to respond to Maria Cotena, who contacted me. She was at the University of Michigan at the time, and she said that she had never seen any essay about women collaborating, a Chicana and a non-Chicana. And she wondered if I would tackle this project. And so I said, sure, I'll do it for you. And that's how I ended up writing this essay, which allowed me to talk about how I came into the project, how we worked, and Ruth's insistence that I have the final say in how that book came out.
Well, thank you so much it was over a year and a half from your writing from your essay that said you're working nonstop on writing, editing, talking about things. And well, you know what? This is like the kind of Bible. I have it right here. And I just want to tell you thank you. And the way it was so masterfully divided, right? Just even talking about the origins, right? Native women, mestizas, colonists, to rural Texas, to the evolution of women in teaching, business and professionals, to then the movement, right? And then, of course, my favorite, biasly, holding public office, things of where Tejanas have contributed to that perhaps we still have a long ways to actually write about. And these biographical sketches really serve as an important map, guide, right? To tell others they have contributed in so many different ways. And I think I just want to say thank you because it's not just a labor of love, right? It's not just that. It's an intellectual journey,
right,
of uncovering and preserving these histories of Tejanas.
Well, you know, there was always been a bias that Behanas just didn't participate in political life. And so Ruth and I put in, we have actually two chapters on Behanas and politics in that book. We really wanted to disprove that idea. So it was a tremendous amount of work. I was working pretty much full-time, almost full-time at the time. And so I did research during the day for another project. And then I would come home and I would write. I had a very strict schedule about what I would do. So, you know, we divided both by subject matter and then by different periods of time. The chapter on rural women was drawn a great deal from four interviews that I did, four oral histories I did with women, mainly in my family. So, and they are all archived at Bader University's Oral History Institute.
Thank you. So I have one last question for you, Teresa. How do you see the histories and writings about the Tejanas evolving now that you kind of set the groundwork of, you know, with the Tejana land?
Well, you know, I think that even prior to that, when we used the term Tejana and Las Tejanas, which is very controversial, people didn't think we should use it. I'm glad that many more books have come out since that many years ago that we published this book. With this book, Tejana Land, I hope that those who read it who are, you know, are writers or want to be writers and who are working both in history and other genres, that they see this landscape of Tejana Land as being all encompassing. In other words, that it involves this landscape, which is both cultural, geographic, historical. In other words, if you want to enter Tejana Land and you're not a Tejana, that's okay. You just have to be aware that this is a very solid landscape and that this is the landscape that is a very valid one. We tend to see Texas history as, you know, the oil rigs and the like without really seeing this larger landscape. I would say that probably applies to different cultural groups in the state, actually. But for me, Tejana Land is this big pronouncement that you don't shy away from this important land that I grew up in and lived in. And I think many people always thought that I came from the valley. They didn't realize that someone who grew up in Central Texas could write this kind of work. So I wanted to disabuse people of the idea that it doesn't matter if you grew up in Dallas and Fort Worth, or you grew up in East Texas, or you grew up where I grew up, there still is this huge array of material from which you can draw. And in my case, the inspiration came directly from my family, who told me stories. I asked them questions. They took me on trips around the countryside. They told me where they lived, how they worked, the dances they went to. They would point out all these geographic places. So they're as much the authors of everything I've written, including Tejana Land. I really want people to explore more and to, you know, to do it in any genre that they think is important, because they all are a way of telling this history.
Absolutely. I love how you broke down the geographical similarities, but also the divides, because, I mean, there is a lot even within Texas, right? The meanings of the regions and how that contributes to, you know, the landscape, understanding of the landscape and experiences. So thank you so much. To my listeners, thank you for listening to this episode, which featured award-winning author Teresa Palomo Acosta. Hasta la próxima.